Okay, Ramblers, let's get rambling.
Now where it is now, everybody wants a piece of the market.
Oh my God, that is funny!
I don't remember asking you a thing.
I'm funny how? I mean funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you?
With all due respect, what the are you talking about?
Oh, I'm sorry, did I break your concentration?
What the is so funny about me? Tell me what's funny.
You represent the idiocy of today.
I did not know that.
English, motherfucker, do you speak it?
Are you listening to me?
How's my shit together?
Nice personality combination, hostile and intolerant.
So that's it then. No one else really knows anything.
Welcome back, Stocks and Giants. I'm talking about Mr. Matt Weber on the board. Mr. Kevin O'Neill. SP Futures up 475. Dow Futures up 34. NASDAQ Futures up 17. As we've got this pattern of a big day, then a pause, then another big day. We'll see if we get one today as we continue to talk about the China situation. And we evidently this one's got more run to it. We'll see. I mean, I've probably got people pretty long, but I'm very nervous because I don't know how. Well, that's my job to be nervous. How's that for Kevin? It's my job. Be nervous.
Be nervous and assumes other duties as requested.
Yes, and be nervous and worry for other people so they don't have to. So that's so that's a job.
Yeah, because nobody worries about their money. They're totally ready to let you do that.
they worry, but they don't. They the usual. You will actually get the very aggressive, but not much risk. Sort of like you get that, sort of somebody.
Sort of like, don't give them anything that good to hit, but don't walk them.
Yeah, it's the exact same.
Exactly like that.
By the way, you think we can still get anybody for some of these Cub guys if we dump the team early and get draft picks and start over?
Oh, man, they can't pitch, can they?
No. Plus, it's, boy, there's nobody in the stands last night in Atlanta. Of course, Maddie says they've been actually getting decent crowds in a new place, but. I just was wondering.
Well, it was a lousy weather night, so.
Oh, yeah.
I can imagine that everybody knew it was going to rain. That was the whole thing when I was driving from my class, my evening class, and they were talking about, better get on the board, because this is not going to be a full game. I don't know if they finished it or not, but, I saw 6-0 and said, well, I'm not interested in watching this crap.
Yeah. No, I think they ended up finishing, it was 9-4 or something. But the Sox are opening today, the weather should be halfway decent.
Yeah, I think so.
The Sox are at least doing something intelligent. You can scoff and say there's nobody there anyway, but I think their first like 8 or 9 games are 110. The Cubs, on the other hand, one of my Fed buddies has invited me. His wife is going, so Ed and I are going to see the Cubs next Thursday night, where it's supposed to be like 30 degrees from what I see. So who knows? Cubs already, of course, got the night games going. They don't care. It's whatever the.
Well, the Cubs is a neighborhood entertainment experience sometimes. So they want people there in the evening to spend money at every place else, including where the Cubs have money invested.
If you've gone by there now, there's like 3 or 4 bars right on the property.
Yep.
And it's not today. Kevin, all you have to do sometimes to be bitter is to have a decent memory. So really, you're better off.
Or get old, either one.
Yeah, or just the property. I don't know. I'll be brief with this, but I know people that paid. I know of people that paid all kinds of money for spots like a parking lot or something to build a bar in that neighborhood, like big dough for just a spot for a bar or a restaurant. And then the Cubs, for years and years, used that land west of the park. And there had to be, I don't know how many acres there, but there was parking for the players. There was a car wash way back, and I believe there was either a donut joint or a hot dog stand. Maybe fill me in on it. Was it a donut joint west of the park on what is now their property? I think it might have been a donut joint. And
I have no idea what you're talking about.
West of Wrigley,
there was the players' parking lot.
There was a car wash, right, way back.
west of the park, by where the McDonald's was?
No, no, between the park and Clark Street on the Cubs now property. I'm going way back. Over by,
there. I remember there was an auto shop. I don't know if it was a car wash.
No, no, that's across the street.
Okay.
I'm talking on,
on
east of Clark and Waveland. There was a car wash on that corner, and there was a donut joint closer to Addison, because it was kind of a pizza kind of place, because Clark Street is a angled street.
Yeah.
So I think the Cubs, like, charge these people rent for, like, years. So when the Tribune was going to sell a place, the issue of that property came up.
That hot dog stand's still there. But that's... that's still there, across the street from, like, the Metro music venue. And
I'm talking, I don't think it's that far up the street.
No, I'm talking about... It's not there. It's right where the big park is, where the people play during the game and stuff.
Okay, that's, so, yeah, that was the... I mean...
It was a Dunkin' Donut. Or not a Dunkin', but it was a donut joint of some kind. Whatever.
Remember that being the players' parking lot forever.
Yeah, but then there was... If you go back off, there was a car... There was a couple other things there. And so when the Tribune went to sell the place, and they... Essentially, we're going to sell that property. Well, of course, somebody leaked, or some reporter got somebody. They never owned it. There was a railroad track, an old railroad track that went through there, and it was essentially a railroad easement for whatever railroad this was, like 100 years ago, when that area was somewhat. And you can the tracks go further north. They go through where the convent is, and where people park up there. The tracks are still there, a couple spots, and so they send this thing to the city, and it was published. A document saying that it was their property. The thing had been, I'll use the term mimeographed, so many times, Kevin, you couldn't read it. The Tribune said, this proves it's ours. It wasn't theirs. It was an easement for a railroad that long abandoned it, and the Cubs just used it. Okay, so, which is all right, I guess. And so, of course, when the Tribune goes to sell it, they want to sell it to the Rickards. Somewhere along the line, I think the Cubs gave them that property. They finally settled for like $2.5 million, which is maybe half the cost, or two thirds of the cost of what I know some people paid for, like, you know, a place just to build a bar on Clark Street. So it's not like these people don't get. So when you see these kind of really, hey, that's a great place they got there. It's an incredible advantage over other people in the neighborhood. I mean, you know, and I understand that when you've got a baseball team, you do something. You're gonna do stuff for people. You're gonna make the infrastructure improvements. You're gonna make sure to get the nice L step. You're gonna do all the stuff you want to be to have that kind of stuff in your city if you're mayor. But boy, oh boy, that many acres in a city, first of all, that you charge people rent on for years when it wasn't even yours, and then they finally give it to them for $2.5 million. Man, how much are we talking about? How much do you give these people? I guess is my question. Just saying. So now all those,
whatever they want.
Whatever they want. Now all these new bars and restaurants and everything, they look fantastic, are essentially competing with the guys down the block that paid three times as much for the property. And, you know, I guess I have an issue with that, because I've always been on the guy who the other guy got the deal. Maybe that's my problem. If I was the one and said, I got the deal, well, hell, look, it's 40 steps less to my place, the other place, we're doing the world a favor. You know, there are people that think that way, right? Which is just not me. Anyway, Kevin, all kinds of stuff to talk about we didn't talk about on Wednesday. Where do you want to start?
Oh, let me see. Are we going to shut down the border? No, we're not going to do that anymore.
No, that was Monday, Kevin. That was Monday. This is Friday.
Yeah, so old news. So,
yeah.
So now, you know what? I do get the frustration. You know, just to back up the train a little bit, the problem that we are having now with as far as immigration is that the laws are different for people from the Central American countries, from Honduras, from Guatemala, and so on. The laws are different. So when somebody from Mexico comes into the country, they catch them and send them back. When somebody from Honduras comes into the country, they have to house them. They have a limited amount of time to house them, and then they have to let them go. Well, the system's getting flooded now with that, and they can't handle the volume, and so they're basically just left with no other choice but to let people go. And so that's the crux of the problem that we have right now, is the system's overwhelmed, can't deal with it, and everybody knows it. Everybody who's coming here knows the laws and knows that that's the way it's going to play out. So saying, yeah, this is a problem. So we're starting to get a little bit of admission that it's more than just Trump bitching about it. And so his frustration with Mexico is, hey, you're just letting them into your country to pass through. It would be like people in the United States, or like the United States saying, oh, we have Mexican people want to go to Canada. Okay, come on through. As long as you pass through, it's okay. And so, you know, Trump is trying to get Mexico to enforce its own laws. Now, shutting down the border, not a good idea. And now the latest, you know, I'm going to put a 5% tariff on cars. I don't see what that's going to do. That seems nonsensical to me. So I don't know what he can do, but he's got, you know, he really needs the cooperation of the Mexican government.
Well, there isn't anybody that is around for a while that has his eyes open. It doesn't realize that there's somewhat of a problem with a semi-open border with a neighbor that's got issues, right?
A whole neighborhood that has issues.
But I'll try and keep the personality out of it. The thing that's really messed up is for the guy to come in. Well, again, I'm trying to stay away from the personality. Everybody's known this. It's not like Bush, Clinton, Obama didn't try and figure out a way. Everybody knows that when you have the economies under your border are much worse than yours for a lot of reasons, some of which you're part of, certainly the drug trade. If we didn't have any customers up here of the drugs that Mexicans put up here, the Mexican cartels, Mexico would look a lot different than it does, because you wouldn't have the drug cartels being way more powerful than the government. So we're sort of part of the problem, not the whole problem. I understand that part. And so for him to just lambaste the people before him as a problem that they were too stupid or too lazy to take care of is wrong. It's been a problem for, God, Kevin, as long as you and I have been alive, and it's been a while, right? And everybody knows that we've been giving money to Central America for years, kind of to keep people out of the news, somehow to keep everybody with a pot of chicken and every, or a chicken in every pot. Somehow, some way, it's kind of a salve over the wound before we can get a doctor to it. But anybody, hell, your brother's roommate, remember, in a freshman year, Mario, was from Nicaragua. Mm-hmm. Well, I used to sit there and talk to Mario with Tim, and he'd tell us stories about Nicaragua that were bone chilling. Didn't his parents get killed, or his uncle got killed, or somebody like right in front of him, or some crap, some shady government took over and, I guess it's probably a little better, but it's probably not much better. Some people get all the money down there, and some people just kind of live and go. And I mean, this has been.
Well, and actually, a lot of those kinds of murders that, as you're describing it, those are really, you know, the class system there is that there's a lot of poor people, and you know, and that's who's really kind of doing the caravans and coming to the country and wanting to get in, because, and they're looking for a better life. They're looking for a chance to make more money. There will be money sent back home, and so they're doing that. It's totally understandable. It's not hard to understand. It's just chaotic at the border, because the people in Guatemala know our immigration laws better than our own people know our own immigration laws, and they know how to take advantage of it. The murders, those kinds of things that, you know, in general, other than being totally poor and having, you know, being dirt poor, having to work hard just to scrape by a living, that's not where the murders are happening. The murders are happening because that's the wealthy classes duking it out amongst each other. You make an enemy, and the hit goes out. It's almost like you're, I want to say it's almost like mafia families fighting,
right? Oh, yeah.
over power, and so that's a, you know, that part of it, that part that would get you asylum, is a different aspect of the problem, and that's even though people know and they're smart enough to claim asylum, that's not, you know, not why they're here. They're here
not,
to try and make a decent living.
What you're saying is if you don't cause any trouble and you shut up and you don't mind being poor, you don't mind not having medical care, you don't really get picked on enough to where it's asylum, which is true.
Yeah, no, yeah. You'll be left alone. Now, yeah. Is that a great life or a great thing? Of course not. And like I said, it's totally understandable why anybody would want to come here to get, you know, to find work and to send money home or to get the family here too. It's totally understandable, but we, you know, it doesn't work well when we do this in a chaotic way.
No, it doesn't. And there are places, I mean, we talked this week on one of the shows about essentially downsizing cities. I mean, you can't tell me that there isn't, I'll use the term room, you know, but again, I understand the moral dilemma that if you let 10,000 people in, you're going to end up with 100,000. I mean, hopefully I'm not dumb enough to not see that. But I also know there's room in Youngstown, Ohio. There's room in Canton, Ohio. There's room in Inglewood for 5,000 more people. I mean, it's empty.
Well, there's room for the people. The question is there employment? Is there enough employment for people? Because the way it is right now, you talk all the time about wages not growing, or at least not growing fast enough. Yeah, of course not, because you have people suppressing the wages in a lot of these jobs because they're off the books and they're getting paid squat by American companies. I mean, it's part of anything that would get done about this would have to include crashing down really, really hard on U.S. companies that are knowingly hiring people at substandard wages to do these jobs. So when they talk about that the Republicans don't want to solve this either because they represent, you know, the constituency is the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, that, you know, there's that problem too.
There's an entire, shall we say, industrial group that is very, very happy that they're not paying people the $50 an hour that if the CPI would tell you they should be paying people. If you look at what they were making in 1978 or 79,
or even 15,
yeah, or even 15. But I will say this, Kevin. I actually know an awful lot of Hispanic people. I never met anybody who was lazy. And I'll tell you one thing: if you were to put 5,000 of these aren't Hispanic, I know, but you put them in Inglewood, and you show up with 10 buses every morning and say we're going to the forest preserve, and we're going to redo a lot of these areas and plant trees and do this thing, that bus is full. In Inglewood right now, nobody jumps on it, and I don't know why that is, but they don't. And there's something wrong with our view of why should I do that when I can sell drugs for twice as much or 10 times as much. I mean, I think there's solutions here. If we used our head, we could do some stuff and solve a lot of problems. Not that, you know, we want people up here planting trees in the forest, but that's not my point. But I mean, yes, you can't just have, the solution is to, everybody knows, Trump knows, I mean, I would never accuse him of not knowing, he knows the solution is to straighten things out in El Salvador so people don't have to friggin' leave. We all know that. But it's been how many friggin' years? I mean, and to just accuse the president before you of not doing it right, I mean, this is obviously a really big problem. And the only way you're going to solve it, if it's solvable, is to have everybody on this end sit in a room and say, all right, what can we do? Can we take anybody? If we take anybody, does that mean we got to take everybody? How do we work with the Mexican people to not let them in down there? Because once they're in their southern area and they're marching up, now it's a problem for them and us. It's not the idea that we constantly are, you know, yell at people and insult people for things. I mean, it's what are we going to do? And Trump is finding out the solutions are just as hard as Obama found out, as Bush found out, as Clinton found out, right?
Well, and the mission isn't to keep people from coming here, and Trump was pretty clear about that in the State of the Union. I'll give you the quote. He says, "Legal immigrants enrich our nation and strengthen our society in countless ways. I want people to come into our country in the largest numbers ever, but they have to come in legally." And I think that's really, you know, that's ultimately the point is. This can't be chaotic. We have to have this under control for a lot of reasons, which includes the humanitarian angles on it. That the way people get smuggled into the country now is, it's actually cruel. That,
sure is.
The number about a third of the women who make the trip get assaulted. That's not a made up U.S. government number. That's Doctors Without Borders.
Oh yeah,
providing that number. So, if we could make this system work, But nobody wants to. Nobody wants to solve it. You want the ultimate indication that nobody wants to really wants to solve it, that everybody likes having the issue instead, is Trump put on the table a DACA extension. And remember when the government was closed and he was trying to figure out ways to entice somebody to make a deal with him? And he put a DACA extension on the table. Now, would you not think that when they finally did reopen the government and say, okay, we're going to take 3 weeks and we're going to negotiate, that once that was on the table, a pet issue, especially a pet issue of the left, that once that was on the table, do you not think that would have been inserted into the agreement that they finally made?
Well, you would think, but...
No, it wasn't even raised. It wasn't even put on the table.
Well, I'm not...
Even though Trump absolutely would have signed off on it.
Where did I get at the part where I was defending the other side? I think that what you're talking about, Kevin, and you've actually... one thing you haven't mentioned, but you've been speaking all about it. I don't think... When you talk about chaotic, the more I read history, I think humans jump from one crisis to the next. You know, we don't really sort of don't plan for anything. I mean, I was somebody a couple of weeks ago. I don't know where I was. Guy was giving me some long story about the border this and the border that, and we don't want any of these people here. And you know, which is not what you're saying, by the way. And I said, do you have any idea that worldwide there's 65 million people, are the numbers I've read, that are uprooted and on the move from one place to another because they can't live where they were living? The guy looks at me and goes, it can't be that big. I go, yeah, it is. And we're, to a certain extent, and I agree with you, everything you said today, I agree with you, which is not good radio, by the way. We have no idea.
We'll work on that.
Yeah, and we'll work on it. We have no idea that hasn't Jordan taken in like 2.5 million people, and they only got 2.5 million people from the Middle East? I mean, that guy should win every peace prize for the next 10 years, the guy who runs Jordan, and he's somehow keeping chaos out of his place. I mean, you look at him compared to the job we're doing, and the, I'm not saying we should take 30 million people, that's not my point, but do we have any, as long as it's not here, we ignore it? I mean, this is how many people are fleeing out of Yemen, for God's sake? I mean, the world is a mess right now with all this stuff. And we've got this, you know, we go to New York and you look at the ocean and say all those other idiots are over there. I mean, when Dr. Eric was a reporter in Washington, because it was somewhat sleepy. He's covering the politics, and he covers a murder once a week. He goes, all of a sudden, a crystal mesh shows up and he's covering 3 murders a night. Well, things are chaotic. How can we find a way? I mean, how do we have, who's the lady who just died, entertainer, and she had a drug overdose. That was her name. And,
I think you're talking about Whitney Houston.
Whitney Houston.
Yeah, it's been a while. She didn't just die.
Okay, well, okay. It's been a while. And, when you're this age, it's just a while. Just a little, like yesterday, but. But I mean, the bleeps are up there talking.
A tangent to that is everybody's young too.
Yeah, oh yeah.
She died.
Everybody's a kid.
Yeah. She died 7 years ago.
Okay, well that's recent. but the lady died from drug overdose. She'd been doing drugs her whole life. All the bleeps that gave her the drugs are sitting there in a funeral thing talking about this is her great boyfriend. This is Kevin. We should have put the cuffs on all those people. I mean, if we stopped the demand up here, if we actually cared about people not doing this stuff. What do you think Mexico would look like differently if nobody could sell cocaine up here? The economy might actually have to be an economy.
And we could do that, too. I forget who I saw. It might have been Carl that put it on there, but it was somebody who said, yeah, you want to fix that problem, you can go with, who is it, Hong Kong or Taiwan or something, where, you just, the penalties are so harsh that they don't have a problem. I don't know that that's what we want to do. I know that there are a lot of drug users who have a lot of influence, and so that's not what they're going to want to do. You know what? If I were to rank the issues that we have tied to immigration, I'd put drugs, like maybe third or something like that. I don't think that's the hot button. I think the hot button is that we definitely have issues in this country, not just from the South. It's from Asian companies,
oh, yeah,
and countries as well. We have trafficking issues, those especially the child trafficking, but all of it. Those are serious issues, and to ignore them I don't care if there's demand for sex services or child sex or any of that in the United States, those are people who, you know, the world needs to come crashing down on them, and we have to make it really, really difficult to bring people into the country under those circumstances so that there is no incentive for the evil people that do it to try and get away with it.
Kevin,
to make it impossible to get away with it, too.
From the days of the gangs in Chicago, every time you have a big problem in this country that's crime-related, you find that there are straight people involved. This is kind of a big story. We'll talk about it after the break. But there's straight people involved. I mean, there's people that we look up to in this country that are probably part of the drug trade. You know, part of the policemen that we brand every single one of them a hero, a lot of them know right where it is and are getting a piece. I mean, we all know. S&P futures up 4.25. Dow futures up 28. Be right back. Stacks and Jacks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of HomeSource Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager with PTI and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the CME, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is available to you. We are offering three research newsletters: the Daily News, our Daily Stock and Futures Trading Recommendations, and our twice-weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks. Each of these reports are available via email. To benefit from the same research professionals have used for more than three decades, call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription, or you may also call me for a free portfolio analysis to see how we can work together to build your future. I'm David Andelman, president of DAX Research. Call toll-free 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm always Mr. Matt Weber on the board. Kevin O'Neill, SP Futures up 275, NASDAQ Futures up 1050. That was up like 25. Rest of the world, we'll do Europe first, even though for some reason we have Asia next on the list. We'll do Asia. And Nikkei's up 82.3%. Shanghai up 30.9%. I'm not so sure they're open there. It was the same price as yesterday. I'll check that. Hang Seng down 50, 29.936. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX up 7, call that flat. FTSE up 17.2%. Is now they're looking for another extension from Brussels. I think the people on the continent are going to push Britain into this cold Brexit, and I think that they're going to regret it. But right now, they think they have the upper hand, and they're pushing, and sometimes you don't want to push that hard. Back around up 15. It's just one man's opinion. We got gold is down a buck. We got silver up 5 cents. And we've got oil down 14 cents, but still 61.96. Brent 67.15. So that spread is now $7.20. It expanded a little bit. RBOB gas 193, actually down a penny today. Matty Weaver, Force Traffic Weather Sports.
38 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. A couple of issues to report already this morning on a Friday. We have a crash on Lakeshore Drive northbound just before the Oak Street curve. That's blocking the two right lanes, so that's causing some issues as you're navigating through downtown on Lakeshore Drive. Monroe to Hollywood, 19 minutes. Expect some delays as crews work to get that cleared up, but that's blocking the two right lanes on northbound Lakeshore Drive. Looks like the Edens and Kennedy are off to a good start, though. No issues on the Eisenhower. Stevenson, we had a crash. I-55 on the outbound side just before Route 83. Been cleared as far as the crash is concerned, but there's some congestion in both directions, including the gapers on the northbound side too, so a bit of a slowdown there on Route 83. And then just across the border on the Indiana side, there's an overturned vehicle on Indianapolis Boulevard right at the Chicago Skyway, right at the entrance of the Chicago Skyway, and that's causing some delays too. Everything else looking okay out there. Weather today, cloudy and cool early, but then we'll get some sunshine later on. And it should be a decent day for the baseball game down on the south side. We'll be partly cloudy with a high of 53 when you're close to the lake. Warmer inland, could touch 60 out in the suburbs. Right now it's overcast and 40 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy skies with a high of 79 today. Right now it's mostly clear and 58. In sports, Cubs continue to struggle. Couldn't hit, couldn't pitch, lots of walks, not great defense, and they were blown out in Atlanta, swept by the Braves. 9-4 was the final. Rizzo and Baez homered late to make it somewhat interesting, but Cubs were down 9-0 at one point. They travel to first place Milwaukee to take on the Brewers tonight. White Sox home opener this afternoon. That's a 1:10 Central Time first pitch as they host the Seattle Mariners. Diamondbacks were off. They host the Red Sox tonight down in Phoenix. And the Coyotes blew out the Golden Knights 4-1. Chief.
So we found out that we could hit a couple home runs against their mop-up pitcher.
Basically.
That's always good, you know. It's like me putting you in the last inning on the mound and me going out and playing center field, and all of a sudden I got a bunch of balls over my head and I can't catch them. Anyway, you got me going on somewhat of a rant here, Kevin, and we have...
Oh, that never happened.
I know. Well, we got things going in this country that is you get older, you I guess you get to see more or whatever, you look differently at things. We had three people from the state police killed in the last week here on the roadways. And I'm going to say, I can't even describe how awful that must be to your dad or your husband or whatever, not coming home. And I think one of them was a lady, so a wife not coming home. Yet, on the other hand, I mean, if every one of these people from the state police or any policeman take the head of the state policeman, you know what? If I was governor, I'd take whoever he is or she is, I'll take him out in my Suburban and I'd take him for a ride on the expressways. And if you look at what's happening out there, I've seen people in the last week, I've had to drive a lot, I went out to see some clients. There's people hitting the shoulder at 100 miles an hour to passing a guy going 95. It is absolute carnage. You never see a policeman. It is not policed at all. If you're going 70 and a 45, you're a stagecoach or you're parked. I mean, the idea that somebody would stop somebody on the shoulder and get run into, these guys sound like it's, how could this possibly happen? All you got to do is look around. It's all over the place. The danger is dramatic because there is no policing. I mean, you look
well,
at...
And, you know, I tell people here all the time that we think of driving around here as transportation, but if you go to Chicago, you have to think of it as competition.
Oh, yeah. But I, one of my friends, and I think you've met him, John Lee, he's been on a show a few times. He has lived for the past, 15 years in Singapore. And he told me the first time that he went over there, first him and his wife aren't, porn people or anything, so he sends his movies over. We don't get his movies for like 3 months because somebody has to watch and make sure there's not anything politically or sexually incorrect in there, even though they have hookers in the bars over there, so they have a different view of the world, too. But he says, if I'm here a while, I don't like the fact that newspapers kind of have been read before by somebody, although I think our press here, to a certain extent, looks to me like it's been filtered. You can fight over certain subjects, but not other ones. So it's almost like, okay, you can fight right and left, but you can't fight big versus small. You can't accuse Boeing of this. You can't accuse anybody of this. You don't see any of that. Well, that's another subject for another day. But he says, I'm so much freer over here than I am in the U.S. My kids are 8. They take a cab or they go on a bus. There's no chance anybody would bother them. I never lock my car. I never lock my door. I mean, I'm not big on, caning people in the town square or cutting people's hands off if they're a thief. I'm not big on that at all. But I'll tell you this, what we're doing here is not working. We are absolutely not working. When you have animals running down the expressway shooting these other people out of cars without any worry whatsoever about law enforcement or about anything, this is not society, Kevin. This is not any kind of, what have we got in this country? Last time I totaled it up, 250,000-300,000 people in law enforcement? And to me, nobody does anything. I did one of the guy that I take my car to. He was supposed to sell his place to somebody. The kid who works for him was trying to buy it. Okay, his kid, he's 30-something. Him and his wife were trying to buy the place. They get a loan. Somebody intercepted the wire transfer on the wife's loan. It's gone.
So as far as the lender is concerned, they sent the money, so she owes it.
Yeah.
As far as she's concerned, she never got the money, so.
Yeah. So, I mean, but I guarantee you, because it's under
a mess to unwind.
Yeah, but now I guarantee you that since it's under $1.5 million, none of our heroes wants any part of it. And nobody's even looking at it. I guarantee you nobody's even looking at it. So we have this idea that we got all these heroes. Kevin, they don't, collectively, they're not doing much. The traffic looks like a disaster. You could never take in another country in this world. Well, maybe, I don't know, I'm not in Europe that much. You go down to Inglewood and you see the people there that are trying to live a decent life. They might as well live in God knows where, Yemen. They have no protection. They have nothing. I mean, why? This is America. They're paying taxes, for God's sake. I mean, and yet if you're, well, you know, and yet, you know what, Kevin? And every time one of those houses goes down, every time there's a tax sale, there's a few people that are there to gather it up. Now, is Lori Lightfoot going to stop this? Does she even know about it? Is somebody pulling the strings where they want all the black people in the south suburbs and they want Inglewood brand new for a new community 100 years from now that's going up like Lincoln Yards? Somebody's going to come in here and say, guess what? We got the L, we got the Boulevard, and we're going to make this all new. And by the way, it's all mine. I mean, the stuff that's going on in this country is so damn crooked. You know, you look at it, and meanwhile, some poor guy gets shot walking down the street. He's collateral damage. We don't even care. He's the wrong color.
Try real hard to clean it up and see what happens to you.
Well, that's what I'm saying. That's exactly my point.
Then you're a racist.
Well,
for starters,
that
comes up right away. Why, you know, and then we take it from there.
Well, I'm not saying that if you're, I'm not accusing any aldermen, but there's a lot of money in those wards, Kevin, in the current situation.
Could be current money, could be future money. I hear what you're saying, Tom. I'm on board with it. I'm just saying that in the past, when people have gone ahead and gotten real strict about crime issues and things like that, then they get pilloried for that too.
Maybe they're not doing it the right way, or maybe. Well, first of all, if one of the local leaders is in on it, you're never going to get him to help you, right? I was in my buddy Robert from the Board of Trade. I'll use his first name. Board of Trade from the Federal Reserve. He had some stuff. Tells her name, Stephanie. She was on a show a couple times. She's the marathon runner that does the thing for the mission on the west side.
Yep.
Well, Robert had some stuff that he was giving away, big desk and all kinds of things. So me having the Suburban, we called Sister Stephanie. We go out there and I said, we want to? Oh, yeah, we'd love it. So we pile all this stuff up and we bring it out there. And coming back, I'm on, like, the side street. You see this guy in the middle of the street, big orange outfit, guy sitting on a stoop. I go, I think this is the drug trade. And Robert goes, I think it is too. God, Kevin, it's the middle of the day. It's noon. And the guy's wearing an orange outfit in the middle of the street, so you can't miss him. I mean, am I the only one that sees him? I don't think so. Just saying.
So, well, how about we talk about something happy
and
fun just to wrap up a Friday?
Yes.
So let's talk some basketball.
Irish girls.
Irish girls tonight, yeah.
Yep.
Actually, that's going to be a good Final Four because, as I look at it, any one of those four teams could win it. And it wouldn't be the slightest surprise. So they have Notre Dame playing Connecticut tonight, and they have Baylor playing Oregon. And if you haven't seen Oregon play, they have a player, Sabrina Ionescu, who is really, really good. Baylor has great a couple of 6'3", 6'4"-ish post players who are really good. Notre Dame is pretty much the cast from last year without Catherine Westbeld and with Brianna Turner instead. And UConn has great players. So it's an up for grabs, and it should be pretty entertaining.
Kevin, is
UConn on the side? Who are your picks, Tom? Who are you picking?
I was quizzed about this last night from a dude from Michigan State, and I'm going to say Michigan State. Although Virginia's a chalk, they always manage to screw it up somehow.
Well, they do, but they have, in the past they have screwed it up. I want to say it, they've screwed it up well before the Final Four. So this is, there's no predicting based on past performance when they're already here. So with that.
Well, you know what? I feel the same way. That A&M team I like too.
Texas Tech?
Yeah, Texas Tech. I'm sorry. There isn't anybody there.
Yeah,
it's bad.
If I were going just by what I'd like to see, it would be Virginia. First of all, with Auburn, Bruce Pearl's a good coach. Obviously, he's been successful elsewhere, but he got Tennessee on probation. He got it was academic fraud. He lied about it. Which is a surefire way to get fired is lying to NCAA investigators. Otherwise, they will crash down really, really hard on your school. As long as they can document that he actually lied. He got a show cause penalty assigned to him, which meant he couldn't get hired anywhere else. And as soon as that expired, Auburn pounced. Well, that tells me Auburn doesn't care. So,
well, who's going to hire Rick Pitino next?
They could hire Rick Pitino as soon as I guess I would assume he has a show cause. So if they don't, Las Vegas would be perfect for him.
Who's who's going to hire the little vest dude? The guy who lost last
week.
The little vest guy, the Virginia Tech.
Little vest guy.
He left Virginia Tech.
He did.
Yeah. Oh, you're talking about Buzz Williams? Yeah, he's going to Texas A&M.
Oh, all right. Okay.
Okay, so the interesting story there is
that didn't last till the end of the tournament. Well, they were right. That didn't last a day after. When did he get hired? He just played last weekend, didn't he?
Oh, yeah. He got hired like 2 days after the last game.
Did A&M dump somebody for him, or did they, the guy?
Well, not specifically for him, but they had fired their coach. And Buzz Williams is a good coach. I always enjoyed his press conferences post-game. He is a native Texan, it makes a lot of sense.
Did he have some kind of a buyout?
I can see why he'd do that.
Did he have a long-term deal where he was? Did the Texas A&M alumni have to buy him out, which is a crap I can't believe?
I would have to go read more than I was really interested in reading, so
right.
I don't know what to tell you.
Well, a lot of these guys have these buyout clauses, and the alumni,
sure,
the alumni buy them out.
So the booster club will pay the buyout.
That's that's special. Yeah.
Yeah, it is. It is absolutely special. So, Buzz is gone. As far as Michigan State goes, Izzo is obviously a great coach. I'm not real happy about Michigan State either, between the Larry Nassar stuff that went on at that in their
yep.
program and ignoring that, and the stuff that we heard a year ago about the football and basketball programs covering up assault arrests. I'm not on the cheering for Michigan State bandwagon. I think they have a really fine team, but and would be my favorite. I have a lot of respect for Virginia. I don't know much about the Texas Tech program. They've been entertaining throughout the tournament, a lot of fun to watch. But I do have a lot of respect for Virginia. I think they probably do this about as well as you can in college basketball, where they're successful and there's a reasonable amount of integrity, their graduation rates are good, their academic performances are good, and their players are good. And a lot of people don't like their style of play because they're pretty deliberate, but they do run a really efficient
and
offense.
They can be a little inconsistent. They almost lost to the Irish.
The Irish gave them a tussle, in one of the two games, anyway.
Yeah, in one of the two games.
By the way, Buzz Williams had to pay a $500,000 buyout to break his contract.
That's pretty small,
yeah.
Actually, his college contract.
Well, maybe it was like his last year. Probably had 1 year to go. Most of the contract
could have been that, and it also could have been that Virginia Tech hired him away from Marquette, where he had been very successful. And he may have bargained a lower buyout because they really wanted him.
That's possible, but it seems like the last time I went through the football buyouts, because I always do this, my buddy Beldo always drags me in these conversations. Most of them now are really just the, if you've got a 7-year deal, you leave after one deal, it's like, six times your salary. Don't seem like there's a lot of big bonuses in addition to that, or big penalties in addition to that, Kevin, like you saw 4 or 5 years ago.
Yep.
The
interesting thing to watch with Virginia Tech now is, will they go back to being a bottom third of the ACC type of team, or will they be able to sustain the success that he established as a baseline? And that's going to speak a lot to, we'll see where that's going, based on who they hire, I think.
Well, for a long time, Kevin, I think it's down to, if I listen to our buddy Eric, you can get... He can be kind of a downer on the subject that the good coaches generally learn how to pay people, and without anybody knowing about it, and it's disciplined enough that none of the players tell on anybody. With you and I think whenever you have a new coach, you saw this at Notre Dame when they essentially hired Lou Holtz. It wasn't just Lou Holtz; it was a recommitment to the sport when they decided that's when they built the first indoor practice facility and the big monster weight rooms and all that crap that went with it. There's a rededication to the sport that even if you lose the man, you still have like all the rest of the stuff.
You still have infrastructure.
You still have all that whole mess that goes with it. So I'm going to say that when Virginia Tech grabbed this guy from Marquette, they decided they didn't want to be second tier in the ACC anymore, and probably spent a lot of money on a place to do that other than him. So it wouldn't surprise me that whoever they got in there now, that the thing's got enough momentum that they probably, will be a decent program. At least that's the way I used to look at it. You know what I'm saying? Maybe now, if it's so specific that, if you're a Calipari, you get the one and done guys, and that's what you do wherever you go, and there's only a few guys that can do that, that's sort of different. But this guy didn't strike me as being a guy like that. Maybe he is. I don't know, but
yeah,
you know what I'm
saying? So we'll sort of see how that unfolds. You know, as a fan of an ACC team, that you know, I'll keep probably more of an eye on it than most of our listeners would.
A couple of other interesting notes: Chris Beard, the head coach of Texas Tech, is a Bobby Knight disciple. And Kate was an assistant under Bob Knight and runs a lot of the same principles and offensive sets and defensive sets as Coach Knight did for a long time, and has been very good at Texas Tech. Texas Tech is actually the number one rated efficient defense in the country, and Virginia is number 5, and Michigan State is number 9. So 3 of the Final Four teams have top 10 defenses in the country. So it's not just about offense. But what makes Virginia so good is they also are number 2 in offense to go along with the top 5 defense, and Michigan State is number
in offensive efficiency, but they're never going to pile up the points.
Right, in efficiency, yeah, points per possession. And then Michigan State is number 5 in offensive efficiency to go along with their number 9 defense. So those two are heavily favored according to the advanced stats of facing off in the title game, which would be a very good title game.
So even though the guy's older than Job, Bobby Knight came from the same coaching tree as Coach K, correct? They both coached at Army.
Well, Krzyzewski worked for Knight at Army
and played for him.
But I mean, who was the original guy? Who was the original guy at Army that Knight learned from? There was a guy. They used to say that tree went one guy further back, and I forget who the guy's name was. There was a coach at Army that wasn't a Knight an assistant for, and then K was an assistant for him, and that's where the tree sort of got started. Wasn't there an original guy?
Could be, but being old and feeble-minded, I don't remember.
Yeah, if there was, that guy is not famous.
Well, not only that, he's also not here anymore.
Because Bobby Knight played at Ohio State, and then he, you know, coached at Army, and Coach K was his point guard, and then was his assistant. And so Coach K credits a lot of his, you know, principles to Coach Knight, and Chris Beard does as well, which is interesting because you haven't heard much about Bobby Knight in the last several years.
Well, I mean, even the guys now, the coaching trees in the NFL, well, I remember where some of those coaching tree guys, the trees they came from. You know, like, isn't the guy from...
Right, so if you're part of the Belichick coaching tree, for instance, you're really part of the Parcells coaching
right.
tree.
Right, you're really part of Manson Parcells, and then I don't know where he started, type of thing. So, yeah, you got to go back a generation, Manny, and the tree gets bigger, sort of thing, or gets older or something.
Absolutely.
How many people in college ball coached for Bear Bryant all those years? I mean, you know, that tree was huge, wasn't it, Kevin?
College and pro football, a lot of people who played and coached for Bryant.
So are we going to do a Chinese deal this weekend, or is this deal going to be – it's only, you know, a minute and a half. It's going to be like the song Tomorrow is Always a Day Away.
Oh, that could be. That could be the theme song. I like that.
Well, it's, you know, that was the song of that play, whatever it was. Which one was it? It was, Annie, right?
Yeah, Annie.
Yeah.
Not famous at all. Hard to remember the name of that one.
But I can't believe this. This is more, it was more headlines on the same issue than I think I've ever done days in a row since I've been in the business, this China deal. And I, you know, when it all comes out, from what I'm hearing though, Kevin, they're sort of coming to some kind of at least an assessment of some of the intellectual rights stuff. It appears that they're at least talking about it, doesn't it? I mean, all these articles can't be wrong. If there's at least some movement, which would be nice.
Yeah, it would be good if they can figure it out. One thing you can't complain about with the Trump administration, they do keep a lot of balls in the air.
Oh yeah, I mean. He definitely rousted a lot of things that I wanted to see rousted. And, you know, at the end, it may end up better. I don't know.
Hey, and a quick comment on that, because you like to say he likes to be a dictator or wants to be a dictator. I don't know that he's in that camp, per se, but if you just look at, you know, his background and, you know, he comes from a world where when something got decided, then you expect any CEO would expect it to go get done.
Right.
And I think the guy has a tremendous amount of frustration with the political process there because, you know, he thinks things get decided and then Mitch McConnell can't get it done or Congress can't get it done or, you know, whatever. And I think that probably drives the man absolutely nuts.
You don't think it did?
He's used to being in a spot where he can say, okay, go do it.
You don't think that Roosevelt and the rest of the people felt the same way?
I think everybody feels the same way, but they were creatures of the political process, so they knew how the game worked. And, right. and I think this is so foreign to Trump that he doesn't deal with it well at all.
I will concede you that point, but I will say another thing, and one opinion on my side, is that he has no concept of somebody who works at your pleasure but does not work for you, like the Board of Trade or the Federal Reserve. I mean, in his world, everybody works for him, or else why would they be there?
Yeah, understood. I think that's part of it, and that's part of the downside of electing an outsider.
Yep.
It may be part of the good part of it too.
I think it is too.
But it's definitely a problem.
All right, buddy.
We got Carl coming on. That's must listen radio.
Absolutely. Take care, buddy. SP Futures up 350. NASDAQ Futures up 12. Be right back, Mr. Carl Denninger. Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs, interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous, no return on cash balances, may have some invested a little too much for comfort, some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, if they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with Jan Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we're also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. Might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hi, this is John Neal from PTI Securities and Futures and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, as well as the branch manager of our Peoria, Arizona location. I hope you, like many of our listeners, have benefited from the outstanding market returns of the last several years. But have you recently become unsettled due to the worldwide geopolitical uncertainty, the increased volatility of commodities and currencies, or the looming Federal Reserve interest rate hikes? If you have answered yes to any of these questions, we can help you. Here at PTI, we offer a unique variety of income-producing securities as well as our proprietary hedging program to protect your assets. More information about these exciting programs and much more can be obtained from our website at PTISecurities.com, or feel free to email me at john@PTISecurities.com. That's john@PTISecurities.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, Jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here.
The
something happening.
Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Mr. Matt Weber on the board. Mr. Carl Denninger, S&P Futures up 350, NASDAQ Futures up 13. Carl, I just got this wild view when Matty said, Carl Denninger is ready. I had a vision of you like on the first tee with the soft hat and the, what did Payne Stewart used to wear, the like the knicker things? I could see you, I could see you on the first tee doing that, just thinking.
Well, I'll tell you what, if I'm on the first tee, you better not be anywhere within 50 yards of the fairway in either direction, because you just never know where you're, whether you're going to get that nasty slice or a duck hook.
We used to play in this, the trading floor back in the day when, you know, there was a lot of guys down there with cash. We'd go play up at Black Wolf Run 2 days in a big time scramble, right? Where, you know, they pick all the teams, and there was a
there was a
big Calcutta on the teams. You bet on all the teams afterward, and sometimes there'd be, you know, 20, 25 grand in a pool. And so Dr. J was my he was the D in his team, and I was the B or the C or something. Anyway, we were playing. We were doing pretty good. I think we came in second. But Jan, he has the golf swing of a football player. It's all upper body, so it's liable to go anywhere. So we're on this tee, and there's like this, you know, there's this river, you know, Milwaukee River, or Sheboygan River, the hell it is, and Sheboygan River, and then there's like another little marsh, and then there's this green. Well, Jad whacks one like almost directly sideways, and the thing lands on this green, and these guys are putting. they look around. They're like, where the hell did that one come from? They thought it like dropped out of the shuttle. I mean, there was no tee anywhere around there. Anybody? There was nobody in the fairway. They're like, who could possibly have done this? It like went like maybe like a 4 degree thing right, but it was like 200 yards. So
right.
they're looking around. I'm dying laughing because they never figured out where it came from. All I know is it landed right there when somebody was putting. And John's like, "Oh, give me another ball." I didn't care. It was hilarious. John would show up with like 15 dozen balls and just say, you know, he'd get them like at Kmart or someplace. God even knows what brand they were. And if he launched one in the river, he'd say, "Screw it." And then he'd just go on. Because in a scramble, you just say, "Screw it." You'll hit the next shot where the next guy hit it, right?
Right, exactly. Yeah.
But as a D player, this was really serious rule stuff, though. All your guys had to have three drives in. And some of your,
right.
We were playing a blue tees though. We were young. I mean, as we aged, yeah. We said, but I mean, there were probably five or six holes from the blue tees up there. You needed about a 230 carry just to get over. So none of your D players were even capable of doing it. It wasn't like on their best shot, you know, they were going to do this. But I was always so valuable as a C because I could always really hit the ball. So I mean, there were times when we'd use nine of my drives, you know, type of thing. Even though I was the C player. But there were guys that I remember we hit one on a par three, our last hole where we had to use the D guy's drive. He hits it off the end of his club into the sand trap for the green next to us. And then we had to sit our second shot out of there, and we parred it. But there was one great rule violation one day. My buddy Mike Coyle, I'll be brief with this, there was this big long tee, and we're back down at the Blues. And it was this par three where you had to go over this ravine. And so if you didn't go into the, crap, you were just screwed up. He goes, just get your putter out and putt it to the end of the tee where it's like, you know, a 90 yard shot, and we'll just chip on it. We'll hit a wedge from there and they made a three. Well, then there was a big, huge rule that you can't putt on the tee because it was now unfair. You could, even though, I mean, it was, the tee had to be, you know, there was the red, the white, the tee had to be 80 yards long. You know, so the guy whacks the putter down to the front of it, and then of course it was like hitting in the crap and having to come out, but they didn't have to take a drop, so we ended up powering the thing. But then all of a sudden, everybody was outraged. That was really an abortion to the rules, even though it wasn't against the rules. But that was a specific rule you couldn't putt off the tee. So yeah, there's got to be rules, Carl. You know that, buddy.
Well, yeah, you know, but then again, you know, we have, you know, I've understood that Trump's been dubbed Pele.
Pele?
Yeah,
was Pele a soccer player?
His ball a lot.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I will say this. I mean, I try and be as just as I can to anybody. What did Lou say yesterday? It was the best line I've heard on the show, Matty. What did he say? We elected him to be a bull in a china shop and break all the things that were wrong. We didn't know he was going to be an incompetent. But what was his line, man? If you can find it from yesterday, It was absolutely spectacular, Carl. But I think a lot of the stuff that he's busting deserves to be busted. I don't know that some of the stuff is solvable necessarily. The entire Central American Mexican problem, that's been about a 200-year problem. I don't know. It's just a question of the Democrats not supporting him. I think it's a bigger issue than maybe he's capable of. But the fact.
Well, I think that one to me is interesting, and it's one that I've spent a lot of ink on. And when you really get down to it, when you boil this down to the bottom line, both sides of the aisle want an open border, but of course they won't say that. And they both want it for the same reason, and that is that Ponzi-based debt finance requires an ever-increasing population. And right. If that ever stops, then all the games that have been played for the last 50, 60 years blow up in your face. And there's nothing you can do about it. That's just the way it is. So, the common canard is the Republicans all want them because they're farmers and they want the strawberry pickers, right? And yet the Democrats want them because even though they can't vote, their children can vote. And if you give them handouts for 20 years, their children will vote Democrat. Right?
Yep.
So, that's the canard. But the truth is more sinister than that, which is that we have built a system over the last 50 years that is dependent upon ever-increasing exponential amounts of debt.
Right.
And that's what our economy is now running on. It's been running on that for 50 years. And in order to fix it, we're going to have to break a lot of people's eggs. And nobody wants to go down that road because if you take, just take the medical thing that I've gone on, the air, I don't know how many times, on your show along with everywhere else. Just fix that one piece of it. And over the last 10 years, we take about, 3 million people and throw them out of work in an afternoon.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
Okay, and that's just because those people never provided a second of care to a single person their entire career. They are all parasitic. They're all overhead, if you want to use the nice term, okay, in a business sense. And when you have to tighten your belt and actually make overhead something coherent that you get value out of, all those people get fired.
You know what they say, though, Carl?
It's not mean, it's just truth.
Be careful when you cut the fat. You might be the fat.
Well, yeah, exactly. And so, then the question becomes, oh, my gosh, we can't do that. All these people make 60, 70 grand a year, and what's that going to do to housing? What's that going to do to, all the car loans? What's that going to do? Go down the list, and you start, you kind of get white in the face thinking about that, right? What's it going to do to stock prices? And yet, the reality is that if you try to bring in people from the outside, and the reason we're having this issue to begin with is because we've destroyed the incentives for productive Americans in the United States to make and raise children. And there is not one place that you can look in the Western world today where white women are having children at greater than a replacement rate.
Yeah, they're not averaging more than 2 for sure.
More than 2.1. Okay, that's the number. And nobody's doing it. We're not doing it here in the U.S. Nobody's doing it. So what are you going to do? You're going to import a bunch of people and make a bunch of babies? That sounds fabulous, except for one problem. The people you're importing are all unskilled.
Well, yep.
Now what?
Well, we're trying our best. There's a lot of, there's a million things going on. And I don't know if they all come back to the same place or not, Carol, but if you look at the people that come in from Mexico, say, I'm going to say there's two ends. And then the Trumper actually was, his people don't care, but he was dumb enough to say, I really would rather have people from Norway than people from Mexico, okay? But, I mean, we see this going through our system here. I was talking to a friend of mine the other night whose daughter is real bright. She's applying to all these schools, right? Well, she gets shut down from one of the Illinois biochemistry or God knows what. Even though she's got, impeccable credentials, because without casting any aspersion, I'm going to say if you and I showed up in the first class of the biochem group or what are the guys that do all the calculations for insurance companies, math guys.
Oh, the actuaries.
Yeah. I'm going to say that 80 to 70 to 80% of those people are from overseas and they're paying 130% of the tuition rate, and they're telling people in Illinois you can't do that. But it's funny to me how the lies that people tell, or the president will say, and I'm just picking on him, but every politician will say that, and people have told me these people that come in from Mexico don't pay any taxes, and it is so untrue. I mean, in the Chicago area, which is the regressive tax home, especially if you have a language difficulty or can't read street signs and you're getting a parking ticket once a week, your taxation load, in terms of percentages, with your home, with the house you're taking, your home tax, your consumption tax, God help you if you send your kid to a school, private school, but you're in, and we had the girl on from DACA, and it says none of the people she knows even send in their income tax for a refund because they're afraid it's going to shine a light on them. So they don't even get, and I don't think any of these people, they're sure as hell not going to county hospital if they're hurt. I mean, and I'm going to say most of them, a lot of them don't collect on their Social Security. To say that there's no income from that group, to me, is stone cold ignorant. And yet we have politicians that say that every day. I mean,
there clearly is, but the problem you've got when you get down to it is that it's a balance of payments issue. Okay? And in, you know, you have to look also, it's like the old tragedy of the commons thing that I brought up a number of years ago on my column, and that is, let's say that the city of Chicago gets this proposal to build a new sports stadium. Okay? But in order for the sports stadium to work, you have to be able to get 80,000 people in and out of it in a couple of hours whenever there's a game. And, oh, by the way, games are not enough to make the payments on the land and, you know, the improvements, everything else. So we're going to do concerts there and raves and, you know, and whatever else. Okay. Now, there are no roads that can handle that without destroying traffic in a four-square-mile area.
Carl, you don't worry about any
4 hours every time. So who pays for the roads?
You don't worry about any of that stuff. You just let it be clogged and you don't care and you go out of town for the weekend.
Well, see, that's, you can't do that though on a national basis.
Right.
Okay? Can the city do it locally and get away with it? Yeah, maybe for a while until what happens? The guy that makes $400,000 that lives three blocks away, he leaves.
Right.
Because he's not gonna put up with that. And so, who's left? Well, the guy who picks strawberries, but hey, guess what? He comparatively pays very little taxes. Now, he doesn't pay zero.
Right.
But comparatively, pays little. And you look at what Cuomo is complaining about. Oh, you know, we raised all of our taxes, and all the rich people left New York.
Yeah, well, duh. Yeah. Well, I mean, I see it. It's everybody who's in that spot. I mean, you and I, this interesting thing that we're talking about today, Carl, is dovetails with what we were talking about last time you were on, where I was ragging big time about how difficult it is to start a business and how it's become so concentrated in some of these industries. If you were to go back to my years in college and you would have sat in a class with really any economist, not even the Milton Friedmans of the world, they would have said that because what you were talking about, the overhead in the medical area. I mean, right now, if you were going to go to Notre Dame, if you're going to Columbia, you're going to go any place and you say, I don't want this tuition $60,000. I think at the university, the one I looked at, Carl, the University of California, I think there's 10 employees there for every professor. Now, I'm going to say that you and I and anybody with an ounce of gray matter is going to say, that's a lot.
Well, it's insane.
Yeah, I mean, I know whether it should be, I'm thinking in this day and age where you got to have nurses and things like that, I'm going to say it probably ought to be 2 or 3 to 1, but sure as hell not 10. So why don't we be charitable and say 7. Well, there's 30,000 people out on the street. Same thing in the medical community. Even though people go and do their job every day, the pieces of paper flying back and forth 5 times between the doctor and the place, it's just not needed. You go to a doctor's office now, there's 2 doctors and 5 other people. I mean,
that kind of thing is nuts. And yeah, yet, we have become inured to the idea that this is okay and we'll find some way to make it work. Well, guess what, guys? Every time we go down that road and turn that crank, the answer is we're going to borrow more money because there's no cash.
Or you get even dumber, like in our industry, in the FINRA industry, where you have more and more regulators by the day and less firms. and they make their money by fining people. And they become their own cost center by fining. I mean, who designed that? I have no idea. But now the question is, Carl, if you take this discussion, and you and I are now, you know, subjectively gonna fire a million people in this country. I was ranting the first hour about there's 200,000 or 300,000 people, 250,000 or 300,000 people in law enforcement. And what do? There's nothing but crime. I mean, and you drive on a highway, you never see anybody. I mean, I don't know where they are all day. But what I'm saying is, be clever, and we're going to fire 100,000 people out of a school, out of a hospital, out of Commonwealth Edison who doesn't need them, out of Citigroup that maximizes their expenses so that makes them look like they're not making as much money as they are. If we do that and throw them out there, well, wait a minute, you can't be in a utility. That's all taken. There's enough bars and restaurants for everybody to be out in my neighborhood, the different one every night of the week for a month and not even go to the same place twice. You can't be an airline because there's four of them got every slot. Well, four plus Southwest. What exactly do you do? I guess we could all try and have a new software package but there's not like there's jobs for the asking. I mean, the things we do need, massive infrastructure improvement. One of the best ways to save energy in this country is we probably have how many million houses that are woefully under-insulated and under everything else. I mean, there's literally billions of hours of work to do in this country to upgrade things, to plant trees, to do something against the carbon monoxide stuff. There's all kinds of stuff to do, but the people don't match. You're not going to get a guy out of a or a lady out of a doctor's office that is going to go out there and start planting trees. I mean, somehow or another, we've got this massive disconnect of where all this money is going, and you've hit the nail on the head. I just don't know what the solution is.
Well, there's this thing called creative destruction that has this funny way of taking place when you get the subsidies out of the system and you let people fail.
Well, but the thing is,
and here's the thing though that's really ugly about it that nobody, and this is the reason nobody likes it. Plenty of people go bankrupt when that happens. A lot of them. And then, but go back, think about back in the 2008, right? 10 years ago now, a little more. You had all these banks that were going under, and everyone's like, "Oh my gosh, we can't have that happen." You know, if that happens, there'll be no banks, and we can't have the lubrication for our financial system, and we can't, nobody can borrow money to buy a house and this, that, and everything. And I stood up, I put my hand up in the air, and I said, excuse me, there's a Wells Fargo office up the street from me. If that bank closed because they went out of business, because they wrote a bunch of fraudulent loans, and they blew up in their face, and the company went to zero, does anybody think that tomorrow somebody wouldn't come in and set up another bank? The people that need somewhere to deposit their paychecks, they're still here.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Carl, did you ever read, I have not read this, and I don't know if it's published, if people want to put it under the rug. I think I'm correct, and you would know, that we a bank can never have good capital by having stock in a company, unlike Europe and Japan, where they prop the whole system up with that crap. I think the only thing that was good capital here for a lot of these small and mid-sized banks was Fannie and Freddie Preferred. And that all went through. How many banks do you think went out of business, not because they gave out crummy loans, it's because their collateral and Fannie and Freddie Preferred disappeared?
My guess is more than a few, but the biggest scam in that entire situation is that if you look at the face of those prospectuses, And this was a subject of an article back in 2008 that I wrote, you'll see that it says these securities do not carry any implicit or explicit guarantee of the federal government. They're not underwritten by same. They're not guaranteed by same. You can lose money. You know, the usual boilerplate stuff, right? But the red herring on the front of every one of those said that. And by law, Fed can't own them.
Well, but for some reason, there was an exception
they got one of their in-house lawyers to say, but they really are an instrumentality of the federal government, therefore it's okay.
Well, what do you call the name, and I have to bounce this off you because my memory is wobbly. What do you call a city debt that technically is not a general obligation bond, but because it has the city's name on it, even though the red herring and everything says that they're not liable, they end up paying for it anyway. There's a term for that when I was taking my Series 65, or my municipal bond test. In other words, the city of Chicago could have let everybody get zip, zip, zip on the Chicago Skyway, but they didn't. They piled in, kind of paid off the bonds, reissued new ones, and got somebody to run the thing, and then finally sold it and actually made money on the deal. But you could have, one of the best deals ever here was to have bought the Chicago Skyway bonds at 20 cents on the buck where they traded. They never once paid a dividend or an interest ever from the 1956 when the thing opened, Carl. And I'm going to say 1980-something, and they were 30 years, so it must have been 1985 or something. The city went in and said, okay, we're going to make those whole, issue some new ones. But they didn't have a, technically the legalese didn't have them having to, but there's a name for it. It's called I keep forgetting what it is. But in other words, if you're not going to, the city of Chicago probably isn't going to let the city of Chicago, metropolitan sanitary district go down, even though they technically are a separate taxing body. But there's a name for that. I mean, and I think people felt that out of all the things in the world that the government would not let go down is like, you know, plus now, it's making a fortune, and they just took people's stock, and the government's making all the dough. How scary is that?
Well, yeah, there's the problem with not actually honoring what's originally there. Is that this ultimately is what ends up happening? Is that what you had gets stolen?
Yeah.
Okay. Think about this: if Fannie and Freddie had actually been allowed to blow up in 2008, 2009. And the government said, no, we're not stepping in. Sorry, the face of the security says, too bad, so sad. Have a nice day. What would they have traded at? Maybe 15, 20 cents on a dollar?
Easy.
They would have been the deal of the century to buy those.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah.
Okay. Because ultimately, they were good, right? Most of them.
Yep.
Some of them would have failed and been zeros. But if you bought 100 of those bonds, 96 of them would have paid.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
And so, when you think about this, you look at the history of this, it says, well, you know, they're making all this money, they stole all the money from the shareholders. But think about who really got screwed here. It was the person who would have had the opportunity to buy those things at a steep discount when the market thought they were worth zero.
Yep.
And as it turns out, they're not. And instead, the people got rooked were the common people who had gone out and bought the common shares.
Right. And the preferreds.
Yeah, and the preferreds. Yeah. They got hosed too. But you know, consider that if you had just let things go the way capital preference works, the preferreds probably would have been okay.
If they would have taken Fannie and Freddie and put that stuff in like a separate building and just went on like they basically have done with Japanese banks, most of that stuff would have come home to Papa. But every time we've had one of these things, I say every time, 2008, if you want to read the history of 2008, almost verbatim, if you ever want to sicken yourself and it's a rainy day and it's 30 degrees out, I mean, I don't know if you've ever done this, Carl, because, you know, you like to keep yourself healthy, but I've done this a few times. Get on a computer and read about the history of the Resolution Trust if you ever want to get sick.
Oh, yeah. No, I know.
It essentially took an entire wealth from a group of people and handed their wealth to somebody else at 20 cents on the buck. The thing that bothers the hell out of me, Carl, is that if you owned a house in 2008, or I or Maddie, and all of a sudden the house went from 230 to 160, you've never missed a payment. But now you're paying 6% and everybody else is paying 3.5%. But now you can't get your mortgage at 3.5%, even though, you've been paying at 6%. Because nobody will give you the new mortgage. So you end up losing the place. And a guy comes in and gets it, paying the same amount you've always paid or less. To me, that is so screwed up. I can't even begin to go there. I mean, and I don't.
I disagree entirely with that. First off, it's absolute lunacy to get yourself levered up 90%, 95%, 98%. How many times to one at zero down?
Right,
because there's no divisor.
This is one place you and I argue.
You do that. What you're betting on is nothing bad is ever going to happen to the price.
Carl,
well, guess what?
This is one spot you and I have argued before. I'm going to say that of all those mortgages, the people I know in the Chicago area that got trounced on these houses, there's the headline group that should never have been in there. I get that part. But I'm going to say the lion's share of the people I know put down the 15%, 20%, either got it from the inheritance from the parents or saved it up, and they pissed that away in 6 months because, I mean, they lost their wealth in that house. I mean, the house was trading 250, now it's 170, and their 20%'s gone. Most of the right. people I know were like that. And I know everybody, there's a lot of people that say it's because of the people that shouldn't have gotten in. Most, of, I'm going to say 80% of the people in normal areas went in with a regular down payment and just had the place, you know, be worth 30% less a year later.
But here's the thing. All right, so think about this from a slightly more logical perspective. If you look at a house as a place to live, okay, not as something to flip and try to make a capital gain on,
right.
but as a place to live. And that's what I did when I moved down here to Florida because I paid cash, so there was right. no leverage in the transaction. But if you look at it that way, and your payment was $1,100 a month, all right, on a 30-year mortgage. And you know, okay, the rate is higher than it is for the person that got it today because of what happened with the economy. However, it's still $1,100 a month.
Right.
And you still have the same place to live, still has the same number of bathrooms and bedrooms and living space and everything else. Nothing has changed, right, except that you're all bent out of shape because the guy across the street bought the neighbor's house after he, you know, did one of these zero-down crazy loans. And therefore, his payment is $800 a month because he's got a much better interest rate.
Right.
But you still have the same inherent value in a place to sleep that you had before the crash. It didn't change. So what is the real problem here? If you made the miscalculation that you shouldn't have paid $1,100, well, I'm sorry that you made that decision, but it's yours. Well, and why is it that you're entitled to get out of that?
But you've never
at somebody else's expense.
Other than during the Depression, we've never had. And I believe, I don't think you'll disagree with me on this. This was not a business cycle recession. This was a balance sheet recession. You ripped equity out of people, just like you did when the door hit him in the nose at the bank in 1932. My savings is gone. Not just I'm out of a job. The $5,000 I saved up for. We're talking about people that put $50,000 on a place down, and 6 months later, the $50,000 is gone.
Right.
I mean, it's not. But we've never had a situation where in this country, collateral. I mean, it's not that people didn't make bad buys on real estate before; they have. Generally, the collateral in the U.S. housing market was good, and all of a sudden, one time, it wasn't. And the reason why it wasn't was not because people like you and I made bad bets on it. It was because the Federal Reserve let a bunch of people borrow money in Japan at 1% and leverage the thing up here. I really believe, Carl, and I mean, you and I probably could argue about this for a long time, it's not the mortgage that was the problem. It was the $34 on top of the mortgage that was the problem. There were $35 of leverage on every dollar of mortgage in this country at one point.
Right. Oh, no, I know. And you know what? But see, here's the thing. Look at what's happened since, okay? The Fed drops rates to zero. And allows the federal government to run $1 trillion deficits
right.
without having to pay anything for the interest.
Well, hey, you know what?
All right.
We got a dash.
And guess what? Now, all that debt's still out there.
Hey, do me a favor, will you? Something I think would be a spectacular show that I probably could only do with you. How's that for Southside? Next time you're on, we'll have you on pretty soon. Because we got to talk about these labor numbers pretty soon, too. It just came out, by the way, 196,000. But Carl will dissect those for us pretty soon. I want to talk a little bit about what happened to the Resolution Trust and how we never really replaced the savings and loan industry. We've gone from God knows what to God knows what, and how Paul Volcker, I think, could have done that differently and saved some of those places. I don't think he had to be as harsh as he did. But, it's revisionist history. But I think you're probably the only person I could actually walk through this in history there, because the history is very relevant because we're still living it, I think.
Oh, absolutely. And by the way, we're going to get the bill for this in the next few years.
Well, I think we're still... We're still paying the bill for no savings and loans.
Absolutely. It's not gone. The problem is not gone. It was papered over.
All right, Carl, we got to dash. Talk to you. We got to talk to you next week about these employments, even if it's a short segment. Take care of yourself,
you
buddy.
Bet.
SP Futures up now 850 with these labor numbers. NASDAQ Futures up 31. We'll be right back, Mr. John Neal.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs, interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous, no return on cash balances, may have some invested a little too much for comfort, some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, yet they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with John Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we're also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. Might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now.
Hello, everyone. Thanks, Jack. Stocks and jocks. I'm Tom Alley's Mr. Man, wherever we have Mr. Jan Neal waiting in the wings. SP Futures up 975 after this job number came out, 196,000 versus 179. Our last month was 20. The month before was 3-something. So I'm going to say we're doing 200,000 to a little less every month, which is the same as we've been doing for, how many years? 10 now? So it's been pretty steady. You know, by the way, 200,000 people a month sort of enter the labor force, so it's kind of a toss-up as to whether you're just sustaining there. Which is good. It's better than not sustaining, so it's not a bad thing. Dow futures up over 100, so we're pushing it here a little bit because we're waiting for some bad news and we never got it. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX up down 12, call that flat. FTSE up 12, call that flat. CAC around up 11, call that flat. So not much going on there. Over in Asia, we've got the Nikkei up 82, Shanghai up 30. That's a full 1%. Hang Seng down 50.1%. We've got oil trading today down 7 cents. We'll call that flat. Silver $62, $62.03. Brent $69.24. RBOB gas $1.93. So down a penny. So I guess if you get gas this weekend, maybe down a penny. That'd be good, huh? Gold down $1.50. Silver unchanged. What do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
39 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. Traffic starting to build on an overcast Friday morning here coming in on the Kennedy. Eden still looks okay. Eisenhower slowing down significantly. Same with the Stevenson. We had an earlier crash at Route 83, but that's all clear. No issues on the Dan Ryan, I-57, or the Bishop Ford, so that's good news. But we did have an overturned vehicle just across the Indiana border that happened about an hour ago, right at the Chicago Skyway entrance at Indianapolis Boulevard. So that is still causing issues as we speak right now this morning. Furthermore, on Lakeshore Drive, that crash we had earlier at Michigan Ave and 9th Street knocked down traffic lights. So those traffic lights are out of service, and that's causing issues as crews work
just
to figure
that. Look down on the ground to see whether you should go or not.
Yeah, so that's affecting Michigan Ave and Lakeshore Drive down there in the South Loop. This is an interesting one. I'm looking to read more about it, but apparently Larrabee between Division and Clybourne is closed due to an active shooter. 1450 North Larrabee at near North Career Metro High School. A report of several injuries so far. This just came across a few minutes ago.
So what if we had picking up Stephanie this morning? We'd drive right by there.
We would drive right by there. I don't know if it's at the school itself, like it's one of those type of active shooters.
That's like the police academy.
Yeah. So we'll have to see how that develops, but that's scary.
That's where the SWAT team goes to practice.
Yeah, so I don't know if it's... Yeah, I don't know what's going on with that. Off the expressways, we have a crash out in Naperville, Winfield Road at Butterfield. Busy intersection there that's causing some delays. And then it looks like on the south side, South Racine at Pershing Road, a semi-truck hit the viaduct and ripped open the top half of the trailer. So that's going to be closed for a while at South Racine and Pershing. Everything else looking okay out there. Weather today, cloudy early. Could see some sunshine this afternoon for the White Sox home opener, but it'll be chilly, a high of just 53, a bit warmer inland. Right now it's overcast and 41 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy with a high of 79 today. Right now it's mostly clear and 59. In sports, Cubs were blown out in Atlanta 9-4. They're at Milwaukee tonight. White Sox home opener, as I mentioned, is against Seattle. That's a 1:10 Central Time first pitch. Diamondbacks were off last night. They host the Red Sox this evening. In hockey, Coyotes beat the Golden Knights 4-1. Chief.
John, how are you?
Doing good. How about you guys?
I'm doing all right, but sometimes I have to explain some things to my young protege, Mr. Matt Weber, that he just doesn't get because he's a little younger. Now, if you are driving, say, a semi-tractor-trailer unit, and your trailer is, let's just say, 14 feet off the ground, and you see a viaduct that says 13.6, if you go real fast, you're okay.
That you'll just slide right underneath
it. Slide right underneath it, and you'll never even know. So, do you think that driver wants to get away?
Yeah, I would say so.
So what do you suppose you do to help eradicate the situation?
To get out from under the viaduct?
Yeah.
Well, you have to let the air out of the tires.
That would work, yeah.
That would be the number one thing.
Which has got to be a miserable job, especially when it's raining.
Yeah, so let the air out of the tires. And
but
then
it's not going to repair the roof.
But if it ripped the top of the...
Big tow truck.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then exactly. But, man, he hit it hard enough that he ripped the top of the trailer off.
Well, the top is just, like, real thin aluminum.
Okay.
It skins back like if you're, you know, skinning a piece of beef.
Oh, really?
I've seen it. It looks like a big accordion coming back. Just like it's almost like, well, to the, it's like the equivalent of aluminum foil. It just skins all the way back. I mean, it looks awful. I mean, but, yeah.
It makes it harder to get back out again, too.
Yeah. Did you ever see the guys going real slow and looking out the cab, looking up to see if they can make it through? They're leaning out and checking to see.
All those bridges and viaducts are marked, aren't they?
Plus, they're in every truck. There's a... Well, this is before the internet, okay? I'm sure you can still... There's like a trucker's Bible that you can buy. It's a map book that it's, you know, God knows, it probably costs $100 or something, but, I mean, back in the day. In every, like a city like Chicago, there'll be every single spot that there's a viaduct or whatever where every one of them is. When you see all those guys getting off, when we come in the morning, all those guys getting off at Division, the reason why they're getting off at Division is because Division has more clearance than North or Armitage.
Yeah,
you're never going to see those guys trying to get under a North or Armitage. So if you've got a tall truck coming into the city, those guys know that you better get off at Division or you're not making it under Armitage or North. Right? But I mean, but now I imagine all that stuff is online and those guys, I'm sure, have computers and stuff in the truck.
But it still exists.
It still exists. I mean, if you're going to New York, you would have a big truck or trailer units. They're not a truck. It's a tractor trailer unit, right? And it's not a truck. It's the tractor. But there's in there. If I got to go to Queens, I'll look in there and okay, if I have a 14-foot trailer, how do I get to that spot? It's probably not a straight line. You know, there's more to this than meets the eye.
Well, that, and if you're heading that way, I got to think their GPS in this day and age is telling you, stop, dummy. There's a too low of a bridge. You know,
well, yeah, I don't know if you can, program your height into the GPS.
But I wouldn't be surprised if you could. I mean,
I wouldn't be a bit surprised.
There might be a setting in the GPS for semi-truck drivers.
I'll bet it's an app that you might have to pay for.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. But your company might pay for that.
Yeah, if it's...
Well, that's what I'm saying. The home office. I mean, it's obviously, you know, to their benefit to, you know, have that feature. So I guarantee it exists for these big trucking companies.
Well, I mean, and if it's... I'd rather pay $50 a year for that than buy a book and have to go through it. You know, right? I mean, even I am... into the modern technology. But yeah, those guys, I can remember those guys when they had like loads, man. The guy would, if you had you got a load from Chicago to LA, I mean, you'd go to LA and you'd drop the thing off, then you'd head over to the truck stop there was a board in there where all the stuff was listed, you know, if you want to go from LA, you'd probably pick up a load going from there to Spokane or someplace. I mean, that's how those guys used to work. And now, of course, everything's, you know, the truck stop is where you got your next load. I mean, if they weren't all that, unless you were at a big company where everything was all communicated together. But, that industry has had a lot of developments where, you know, they become way more efficient. Plus those tractor units now probably get, what do you think, John? 2 to 3 times the mileage they did in 1975? It's got to be at least seven. Some of those guys get, I'm going to say they get 7-8 miles to the gallon. They used to get like 3, didn't they? Or 2.5? I mean, in those old big cab over things. Anyway, what do you make of this market? We've jumped here a little bit on these numbers. It's kind of not a number where it's huge bullishness, but it's certainly a relief that we didn't do 20,000, two months in a row. But, I'm sensing a little bit of a slowdown, John. Not much. Getting a little worried about the European. And I think that the slowdown in China is probably dramatic enough where these guys are going to make some kind of a deal, but I don't want to throw cold water on it, but I'm going to, I guess. The problem with anything you do with China is there's no court system. Am I right, Manny? The people who all their dogs got poisoned by the Chinese dog chow, did anybody ever get a dime from that, John? I'm thinking no. All those people in the South, more in the South, that use the plasterboard from China, that somehow or another, get this, the stuff was so bad that when it got wet, it leaked some kind of an acid that ate through people's wiring in their houses that were causing shorts in their electrical system. I don't think, maybe people were able to sue Lowe's and Home Depot and stuff, and maybe they got money back for that stuff, but I don't know if the Chinese ever paid. So, I mean, the issue is, what do you do if you get a product from there? I mean, and all of a sudden they say, okay, we're going to come to Papa. We're going to, you know, a moment like Belushi when they saw the light. We're going to stop stealing everybody's intellectual property. What happens tomorrow if, Maddie, you do something and they steal yours? Where are you going to go? World court? You're going to some court in, Beijing? I mean, good luck with that.
Yeah, good luck with that.
There's way more to this than kind of meets the eye. And I don't see how far they can go going forward without admitting to doing it all these years, which I still think they're not going to do. So, I don't know. What do you think, Jen?
No, they're not going to admit any fault in this. And I forgot about that flooring incident. Boy, that sure kind of just, went away on that. What was it, formaldehyde or something that was in that?
It was in the plasterboard. It wasn't on the flooring. It was something else with the flooring. Yeah, I forgot about that one. There was a flooring issue, too. They had the formaldehyde in it, right? I was talking about the wallboard. Maybe Google Chinese flooring. There was something with that. They were selling it at, like, not Home Depot. They were selling it at those off-brand places. Like, the Hobos.
Like some kind of a flooring-only store.
Yeah,
or
yeah.
And there was something in that, too, that was, talking about highly poisonous items.
Yeah.
And they kind of went away, to be honest with you. As far as anything happened to the Chinese is what I mean.
Well, Lumber Liquidators.
Well, yeah, Lumber Liquidators
was the big one.
But they, you might have gotten a shekel or two out of Lumber Liquidators, but I'll bet they never got anything back from China, or very little.
Oh, I almost guarantee it. So,
well, that's what, one of the reasons why, and this, everybody knows I have a soft spot left for railroads because I work for Pullman. But that was one of the biggest issues. I mean, when you look at the Golden Gate Bridge, not the Golden Gate, the Bay Bridge, which was just redone over like the last decade. And what was the original bid was what? $200 million and ended up being $2 billion or something. It was a Chinese company. And I don't see how you would ever have. Now, most of these things, like a securities firm, You know, if PTI has, you know, say we decide we're going to be in, you know, Slovakia or someplace, which of course we're never going to do, you have to have a U.S. office. You know, so somebody can, somebody can sue you if they want to or whatever.
Right, there's a place
to deliver a, you know, the subpoena or whatever. So most of these places are forced to open up a U.S. at least office, okay, so you can allegedly get to them and do something in a U.S. court. But good luck with that. I mean, I don't see how the city of Oakland tries to sue. I mean, if you know, who are the guys that built, Morrison Knutson or something, the guys who built Hoover Dam, if you went over that much, you can rest assured you're gonna be in court the rest of your life, you know, for some reason, you know, bad this, bad that, or God help you if you use some bad material that didn't meet the spec. I don't see how the hell you pursue that in China. I mean, the railroad cars. I mean, we would get outbid, meaning bid less, by Sumitomo, by all these people. I mean, the railroad cars in the CTA were I think they were Sumitomo or somebody. Now, why the hell would they be cheaper in assembling them here? I don't think they have anywhere near the liability legally that a firm here does, Jen. Which is not right.
That's the issue with a lot of these things.
Yeah.
Your wallboard, your flooring. I mean, that's, you know, all that.
I thought people would get pissed off when they started poisoning their dogs, but even that went away.
Right.
And you know, the odd part of this, Maddie, with a beautiful little guy, Venkman, is the list of the dog foods that this Chinese basically crap was in was like a list of every single dog food, from the cheapest to the most expensive, all had the same stuff in it. So when you read this thing in the newspaper and you go, God, why would I go to the aisle in wherever I'm going for the dog food aisle? The one that's $20 a bag is the same crap as the one that's $40 a bag. They all had the stuff from China in there.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, maybe it was more or less, I would hope, but there had to be every single brand had the same stuff. It's like, you know, maybe before you were a drinker, Maddie, the Gallo Wineries, talk about an off topic. Gallo Wineries at some point, I think, controlled some huge number, 60, 70, 75% of the wine industry, in the sense that even if Maddie Weber's vineyard produced like the best wine, you might have it crushed by Gallo or transported to Chicago by Gallo or something in their ship, because they would actually run a ship over. That you were part of sort of that industry, and you go down the aisle and there was Paisano, or there was Carlo Rossi, there was maybe Carlo Rossi was one, but every one of these brands, they were all Gallo. They're all different, you know, all different. Now you don't really see that much. I mean, I guess maybe you do if you go into certain stores, but they were all the same brand. The most expensive one in the aisle and the cheapest one in the aisle was the same place.
The other thing I don't remember about Gallo is everybody, being parents, I'm talking about when I was a kid, had a gallon jug that almost looked like a moonshine jug.
Oh, yeah.
Is what they sold, and it was on every table in town.
Well, gotcha. And the weird part, one of their brands was Sebastiani or something. I remember I was young, and all of a sudden, you know, people just started drinking wine, you know. Before that, if you didn't go to your Italian, you know, grandparents, you never even saw any wine. Everybody drank hard booze and beer. But the one of them got rated as like one of the best Chiantis on the market. And it was in one of these jugs. So what did, like, the next month, they raised the price after it got rated there. Then they pulled it off and put it in the more expensive bottles and put some lower-class stuff in that thing. That's the way that... But, I mean, you see this way this festers itself. I mean, how many different brands... Anyway, let's forget about that, John. What do we make now? We're up 7 now. We've had two big days this week. We had a day of pause yesterday. Now we're bullish, but, you know, not crazy off the chart here today. We've got the China thing. I think there's going to be some kind of a move. I don't think anything gets signed really for a few months, but I think there's enough movement now that everybody seems to say there is, that people feel that something is going to be, certainly before the end of the year, will be signed. And I'm not sure, where do you come down on the tariffs? They go half off, all off, or we leave them on? What are we doing? I'm guessing some of them come off, would be my guess. What does that make for the market? Do you think has China been wounded? Can they come right back because of the money they're pouring into the system? Can they come right back and be as good as they were a year ago or not? I don't know.
You know, I think they'll do enough of this to keep this plodding along a little bit. You know, obviously, you know, we're reaching these new highs and things like that, and, you know, and I think we'll be, you know, slightly up the sideways. you know, till the end of the year that you're going to do just enough to keep this propped up. This is people's chances to kind of get the house in order and, you know, make sure, you know, you have your hedges on and you protect things and, you know, reevaluate what you have so that you don't lose your gains. But, no, I think we'll be, I think we'll still have a relatively decent year, Tom.
Well, I'm trying to stay, pretty long in the money I'm putting to work. I'm doing out of the money repair strategies, actually being bullish rather than selling calls for some of the people who want to be more aggressive. And so far, that's worked out, you know, pretty well. You just have to, you look at what Trump is doing to the Fed, and you know what, John? I see exactly what he's doing and why. I just don't. I mean, his style is just sort of not mine. I mean, if you go back and see, I mean, Nixon hated Schultz, right? Because he thought, I mean, most, you know, Carter would have been reelected if he would have appointed Volcker 8 months later, I think. You know, because he essentially put us in recession while Carter was still in office. If he'd have waited until after the election, I think Carter would have gotten in. Because the economy was not that bad at that point. And clearly, I mean, Bush, one, blames his loss to Clinton on Greenspan, who, you know, ratcheted down the money flow right before, you know, basically during the election season. And So Trump is, you know, is Mr. Ego. And he's not about to let that happen to him. But now he put his own guy in there. Now he doesn't like him because the guy actually is acting like a Fed chairman and saying, we got too much stuff awash in the system and we're going to go back to normalcy. But now politicians, they want no part of normalcy at $22 billion trillion in deficit. The thought of them paying 3% on that is, you know, I mean, for just so everybody knows, if you haven't done the math mentally, I'll ruin your Friday. Every percentage point increase in the interest rate back to where you might actually get something in the bank is, I mean, the government's paying right now an average of what, Jan? Maybe 2.2 across the board?
Right.
Maybe less than that. What are they paying on bills? They're paying, it's a little over 2, I would say, across the board. So pay, say, 2.2. If that goes to 3.2, that's $220 billion a year. So they want no part of normal at this point. They want a number. They don't care if a saver ever makes a dime. They want that number down. They want that number so big people's stock keeps going up and assets go up. And they want that number so big people can borrow at cheap money to go buy their stock back. It's a totally different world than let's have this balanced. And oh, by the way, if we run the money, the interest rates up or down, it's for a reason. Now the reason is just the debt, I think, Jack. I mean, and a lot of other things. And we think if we go to 3.5% right now, which is where maybe Fed's funds ought to be and traditionally have been, even 3%, that we're gonna take a 10% hit in the stock market, and my constituents don't want that. So we're trapped by the policy is sort of trapped, for lack of a better term. Now the question
by
is
how much the U.S. owes. Exactly.
Well, and then guys like you and me and Carl and people around the show, we sit there and say, you can't do that forever because, you know, but they've been doing it for a long time because you're going to create inflation and all of a sudden the cure is going to be worse than, you know, than the summer sunshine you had for a while. And yet so far, except in areas that we see that maybe other people don't care about, we see it popping up in taxation. We see it popping up in a lot of places. The fact is, most people think, you know, there's not any inflation until the government tells me there is. And, you know, I stopped last night. One of my guys that I usually give a ride home to was taking some guy, they were having dinner at this place. So I piled in. I was looking at the menu. I was watching a Cub game. I had one glass of wine since I was there because I love the people. And, so I sit down and I'm looking at one of my favorite dishes they have a whitefish Vesuvio. It's to die for, John. Next time you're in town, I'll take you over there.
But
I can remember 4 or 5 years ago, it was $19. You know, now it's $26. So, and every place you go, I mean, if you were to compare prices on any menu or anything like that with 5 years ago, you're talking, I'm going to say 20-25% off. Anywhere you go, McDonald's, you name it. I mean, a dollar menu is what, $2? I mean, or something, or $1.65. So, I mean, the idea that there's only 2% inflation is insane. And yet, you know, but if we keep looking at men's clothing or something, which in a world where people casually dress more or whatever, I mean, you're not going to get the right numbers. I mean, I think, you know, so anyway, but that's how it pops out. And, you know, and someday, how will it end? It'll end up with somebody who everybody in the country believes comes out and says, we're kidding ourselves, we've got 4% or 5% or 5.5% or whatever, if you just look at it differently. Then all of a sudden, we'll have the Fed doing the same thing Volcker did. You know, it's probably 4 or 5 years out. And they're going to say, oh, we got to cut back and all this stuff. Or the European Union, all of a sudden, how do we pay back negative interest rate bonds? I mean, we're not making anything on these things. Look at all the money we owe. So anyway, so John, I think you're right, though. You said you're mildly bullish. What about, is gold going to hold here and go back up? I'm thinking it might.
I think it will, Tom. I was looking at that yesterday. It's pretty hot and heavy. And I think actually it might have started to bounce yesterday.
Are we stubborn or are we patient?
Oh, I think we're patient.
Okay. Chad, have a good weekend, buddy. S&P Futures up 750. NASDAQ Futures up 28. Back on Monday, Stocks and Jacks.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex, offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.